Visit a farm. Log on to escapemaker.com for more ideas on local weekend getaways and day trips to orchards, farms, wineries, breweries, and more. Get out of the city and explore while also supporting your local farmers. Log on to escapemaker.com now to get inspired and make your escape through the net.
Hi, this is Katie Kiefer from What Doesn't Kill You, Food Industry Insights, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right. David is giving me the thumbs up from the engineer booth. And I guess that means this is happening, guys. You have done it once again. You have found your way to the Heritage Radio Network. We, of course, are coming to you from the back of Roberta's Pizza here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And you're tuned in to the Farm Report. We are kicking off the fall season, heading into all things fall. And, you know, if you're like me and you're from northern Michigan, fall means, you know, pumpkins and squashes and the very last of the corn. And maybe if you're super lucky, a little bit of fruit here and there and apples emerging. And but if you are like my guests, the fall means chiles, New Mexico green chiles to be exact. I'm really excited to welcome the team from the Zia Green Chili Company to the studio. We've got Nate, Ivan.
Ivan.
We were like talking before the show about maybe some potential name changes. So, guys, we're gonna go back and forth, and then just write us in, let us know what you think, and then of course Cody. Guys, welcome to Heritage Radio Network.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So we are like hot in the midst of green chili season. Is that right?
Yeah, green chili season, it's only harvested one time a year in the fall, usually as early from maybe mid to end of July, and then it can last as late as like mid to end of October. So yeah, we're right in the heart of it, kind of that like end of August, early September, it really, really gets in the heart of it. And
so now if you're a fresh chili lover, thanks to you guys, really almost anywhere in the country, folks can get a delivery of fresh green chilies. But that doesn't mean now is the only time to eat them, because really, I think like the more traditional year-round way is to have them roasted. And we're definitely going to go into that process. But let us start at the beginning. Nate, you founded the company, you said, with your now ex-girlfriend. So the relationship ended, but the business lives on. So there was a, you know, spice in one area of your life here, I guess. Zingers all around. So it was 2014. Tell me a little bit about why you were like, yes, the world needs more chilies and I am the guy to bring it to them.
Yeah. I mean, so my story, I guess, Cliff Notes version. I was born in Southern Colorado, but my mom is one of 17 children from this little town right north of Santa Fe called Española.
17 kids.
17 kids.
All right.
Same two parents.
Wow.
No twins or anybody. And it's, yeah, it's very insane. So you'd branch that out and then branch out all the cousins who I am still even meeting. I met one of my cousins out here who had just like graduated from NYU for the first time, I'd say like November of 2014. And it's nuts, but like we've become pretty close and
like big family problems.
Yeah.
I can relate. My dad is one of 11. My mom's one of 9 and I'm one of 6. So it's like,
oh, wow.
Yeah, I feel like we should get maybe some jackets made or something. Like,
yeah,
just like duels. Well, so I guess that's how it used to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, I was just back in New Mexico 2 or 3 weeks ago, partly because it's like the beginning of the harvest and everything. But also they were kind of having a family reunion. So we all got together and it took literally a big high school gymnasium to be able to fit everybody.
And I like that.
It was insane.
Green chilies were served, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So you have some roots in New Mexico. We are talking about New Mexico green chilies today. But still, I mean, how did you,
So, like I said, I mean, I have those family roots down there, and I'd spent a ton of my life and childhood out in New Mexico. And in New Mexico, these chilies are just so deep-rooted in, like, the history, the economy, the culture, just everything that that state of New Mexico is. And you being like part of that, you grow up with these chilies as part of your blood. Like, you put them on everything and anything. And
you bleed green.
You do. Or you red. Bleed green. Or red. Well, that's the official state question, is red or green. And reference, or Christmas, which is like a combination of the two. So in New Mexico, Christmas goes year round, and it's kind of awesome.
What is this magical place?
Oh, it, don't even. It's called the Land of Enchantment, and we'll get more into that. But yeah, so I had ended up moving out to the East Coast, maybe with my family, at the end of my high school years. And then that's where it kind of really hit us. Like, we went out to dinner at like a Mexican style place, and my mom had ordered a dish, and she was like, yeah, I'll have it smothered in Christmas, please. And the waiters just gave her like the blankest stare, and they had no idea what she was talking about. And she was like, okay, like, I'll just have it smothered in green. And then they came out with this like green tomatillo salsa, and it kind of hit us that, like, okay, like, New Mexican food is very, very different and just not known.
Right.
I mean, yeah, these chilies are so under-celebrated, like, unavailable outside of that general Southwest region. So I'd originally, like, found my way up even northern east, where I ended up meeting Ivan at school. We went to Syracuse University. After graduating there, I moved here to New York City. I had worked in finance, venture capital for a couple years, and had actually moved in with Craigslist off this Indian couple who are now two of my best friends. But he had started one of the original companies at Smorgasbord called Bombay Sandwich Company. So spent my weeks in finance, my weekends, like, helping him at the markets there, and just, yeah, kind of saw these crazy, awesome opportunities about, like, what Smorgasbord and Brooklyn Flea were opening up to early stage entrepreneurs in terms of sharing these unique kind of artisanal foods. And then
you were like, let's do this. Well, so for folks who aren't familiar with Cody, because I feel like this is a little bit your area of purview, can you give us a little bit of a picture of, like, what, you know, Smorgas is and, like, what happens there?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's a really awesome opportunity that we're lucky to have out here in New York. And being that there's millions of people, there's always millions of people at this event. I mean, you could have a similar event in some other city, but I don't know how well it would work, because here there's just so much interest in different food coming from different types of people, whether it's just people that live here or just tourism, looking for something fun and different. And Smorgasbord, like Nate was saying, offers that opportunity to launch something unique and different without having to, you know, find the capital for years and years to then go buy a brick and mortar and see if it works.
Here, right. You can, so it's basically just like a pop-up along the Brooklyn waterfront.
It happens. Sort of,
it runs like April through November?
Yeah, sort of weather depending. It's sort of ending depends. But yeah, it's approximate dates, and it's every weekend. And I mean, it's pretty much like just a whole bunch of food stands. You know, a lot of people are familiar with food trucks. So if you just take away the truck, and then you have a bunch of amazing food that's set up every day on the weekends. And it's definitely grown and kind of changed. It's fun to see, because I mean, I had come out here and knew Nate and visited some of the early days when he was working with Bombay, and to see it now, it's like, wow, it's kind of a beast of amazing cuisines and different.
So if we come by like the Zia stand, what are we looking to get?
Man, we have some great offers now. We've, you know, over the times, it's been fun to see how we've kind of changed our menu. We've made it, we've tried to figure out what would work well for that market, but also stay true to what we need to do to represent the Southwest and New Mexico, but also kind of make it work for people that you know, again, we're introducing this product, so you don't you really want to slap them in the face with all this craziness. Like, here's something a little more approachable.
And it's competitive. I mean, you walk into Smorgas and, like, as a consumer, I'm looking around and I've got, you know, whatever, 25 different vendors telling me they've got the latest, delicious,
and everything,
cheesy,
everything looks
ramen,
good. Everyone's
curd, poutine, burger.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, well, all right.
Yeah. Gourmet mott sticks.
Yeah. Those are pretty good, though. Yeah.
All right. So, well, so obviously, I mean, you guys do a jarred, roasted version of the green and the red chilies that folks can get there. And that's a product that's available year round. And then it sounds like there's kind of a rotating list of dishes people can come by and, like, try the chilies out in that way.
Yeah, right? I mean, we kind of a couple staple items. I mean, the stuff sopapilla. A lot of people are familiar with sopapillas just from, like, a traditional Tex-Mex restaurant. It's kind of your big, pillowy, semi-sweet dough that you get with, like, cinnamon and
sugar and
honey. But we've kind of taken the savory route, which is a little more traditional in the New Mexican region. And we've, I guess, kind of snagged the credit from, I think, Nate's mother, who actually has some of these recipes.
Shout out, Mom.
Yeah, that's kind of who were, you know, the backbone of the recipes. And, you know, we really have just nailed it down to just creating really nice, like, red chili chicken and red chili black bean options for stuffed sopapillas, sprinkled with some cheese. And then we smother it with the green chili at the end is kind of the hurrah at the end. It's like everything has the green chili on it. And
Nice. All right. Well, so you're working at Smorgasburg. You have this history, but still, like, tell me about, like, that first trip down to New Mexico. Where you, like, you're just, like, walk up to the, like, side of a field of chilies. You're like, hey guys, my name's Nate. I'd like to buy your chilies and bring them to New York City.
Wow, were you there?
Yeah. No, it's 100% exactly how it went down.
Come on, really?
No, it's not. So, yeah, like Cody had said, we've been doing Smorgasburg, and we kind of started off just by providing that, like, authentic New Mexican cuisine to the region that you cannot find really anywhere around here. And as we started doing that, we started getting a little bit more attention. Like, we got picked up in Gothamist, and, like, even the Albuquerque News reported on us and everything. So we gained, like, a pretty decent following of New Mexicans and people from the Southwest out here. And everybody would come up to us or write to us and say, like, hey, this is amazing. This is even, like, a godsend in some cases that you're bringing this food. But we had a lot of inquiries to, you know, get the chilies out here, too. So we started thinking, and maybe toward the end of, like, last summer, we came up with the idea to, you know, make it in shelf-stable jarred form. And the great thing about these products is that they're not a salsa, it's not a jarred sauce, it's the pure chilies that are roasted, peeled, and diced, and then naturally preserved in lime juice, garlic, and salt. So we put out, you know, runs of those that we have available year-round, and I had... you know, some contacts just through my family. Through
the Chili Underground?
Yeah, the Chili Underground. Well, yeah. But so I had my contacts and everything, and we thought it would be also a great idea during last harvest was the first harvest that we did it, but to get chilies out, like, fresh from our network of farmers and growers that we work pretty closely with, get them out here to New York City and roast them on the spot at Smorgasburg and start supplying a lot of people. Because even when you grow up in the Southwest, this harvest time is such a special time because it's, like, the only time these chilies are able to be harvested, of course. But you take my mom, and I would say she's even, like, a pretty conservative New Mexican in this standpoint, but you only have these chilies available one time a year. So we would drive down to New Mexico and Hatch and pick up, like, a few bushels of it. She would take them back home, roast them in the house, make the whole house smell like this. Oh, it's such an incredible smell. Mm. But then she would take all these roasted chilies and just, like, throw it in the freezer to have for the stock for the entire year. And when all is said and done, it was maybe, like, between 50 to 100 pounds that she just, like, has her stash of, you know?
So that's the whole freezer, you know?
Right,
it's not,
right. This not is the chili freezer.
It's not the I mean, it's not the most convenient form, and that's sort of the birth of the jar as well. It's, you don't have to dedicate an entire chest freezer chili, you can have the side of your fridge, you know, and kind of restock.
And you can get it when you want it. Well, so let's talk a little bit about what makes a new Mexican green chili, you know, such a special thing. You mentioned Hatch. So, like, the chilies that you're sourcing are coming from the Hatch Valley. And so is it the seed, like the genetics of the chili? Is it like the altitude, the climate, the region? Like, can I get a new Mexico green chili that I grow in upstate New York?
Yeah. So to briefly answer your question, it's a combination of like so many of those different types of things. You could take the seed that's like kind of been perfected to get the strain of the type of New Mexico chili that you want and come and grow it out here. But when you boil it down to like the science of growing chili and everything, like 76% at least of an individual like chili strain's pungency and flavor doesn't come like from the seed, but from like the way that the plant interacts with the climate. So out in New Mexico.
So no, Aaron. No, you couldn't.
Something would be missing.
You want the real chilies. You gotta come.
You'd have New York air growing that plant versus
dangerous.
So the chilies are grown out from seed. It's a row crop. They get planted in the spring and then.
Yeah. So like the life cycle of the chilies, it takes place like between March and May, usually in the month of April. And then maybe 2 or 3 months after planting the seeds will begin to sprout. And at that time is when, you know, all of the plants have to be trimmed and everything. And then after the seeds have started to sprout, then maybe it takes another give or take like 35 to 50 days for those sprouts to really like mature and for the pods to start producing and everything. And during that time is, you know, just constantly monitoring the fields for diseases, for pests, to make sure like they're getting an adequate amount of water that they need. And it's actually a very challenging crop to grow.
Yeah, that's what I've read. They're a little susceptible to disease and pests. And apparently birds can't taste the heat of the chili, which I was like surprised to learn.
Yeah, but I guess it's all, thanks to birds that we really have these chilies in the first place. Like,
bringing it full circle.
Carriers, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Genesis and the Book of Chili, to my understanding, like, goes back 9,000 years to really, like, the Incas, who used to just have all these, like, little pungent red chili berries, like, growing everywhere. And eventually birds, like, took these seeds and were able to spread them, like, up north to Central America and up in North America and everything. And then you had like Christopher Columbus coming out and originally looking for pepper, and then he found these like berries. But it's funny because like he called them pepper, and that's like where you'd have the combination of like chili pepper, but like the chilies like weren't a pepper, so that was like kind of created around there. But then like the Spanish,
another thing to be mad at Christopher Columbus about.
Right. But then the Spanish found their way out into New Mexico, I guess, in, like, the 1500s, where they were already, like, indigenously growing these chilies, mainly for, you know, personal uses, like culinary uses and everything, and also medicinal purposes, too. But it wasn't really until, like, the early 1900s that you had an Austrian immigrant come in. His name was Joseph Franzoy, and he was actually really the first commercial farmer down in Hatch. And it's all kind of thanks to him that like Hatch Valley is really the chili capital of the world, and that these are commercially available too.
That's what I feel like every Google search I went through was like, yeah, chili capital of the world. I'm like, all right, guys. I think the other interesting fact about the New Mexico green chilies is that they are hand harvested. Which is a pretty special thing. And then in Hatch, like Labor Day is the big kind of chili festival. It's when everyone kind of gets together and.
Yeah. I'll be going down there next week, actually, for that and for a few other things. But last year we'd sponsored part of the chili festival, and it's a cool thing. Like you had people from all over the nation and world who just have this love of these Hatch chilies that come down and, you know, it's like kind of a dinky little festival, but it's awesome. Like you have a bunch of the different growers roasting there. The moment you go into Hatch, just like you get that smell that lasts with you the entire weekend. And it's really an amazing smell.
And the roasting is like an important part of the process because ultimately the chilies fresh don't hold very well. Mm-hmm. Like, so you roast them ultimately so you can have them year round to use.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, they're definitely like a fragile crop, and that's partly why when we're at Smorgasburg and people come up, kind of look at you funny, like they almost disbelief, like, is this really from southern New Mexico? Because it doesn't leave that region very often, and it's difficult to have it leave that region without,
right.
you know, I mean, without a network of, you know, people shipping overnight stuff that's just really not developed yet. It's not like it's an apple that's grown in South America that we bring up and
that you see in every supermarket everywhere in the country.
So it's fragile in that regard. So that's, I guess, yeah, the roasting comes in place where you can make it last. And also it's amazing that way. So
adds a whole other kind of culinary aspect to it, too, I'll bet. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, we need to take a short break to send mucho thanks. See what I did there? A little Spanish. To our sponsor. We, of course, are in the studio with the team from Zia Green Chili Company. And we are talking New Mexico green chilies. Hang tight. We'll be back in just a moment. Visit a farm. Log on to escapemaker.com for more ideas on local weekend getaways and day trips to orchards, farms, wineries, breweries, and more. Or come by Escape Maker's Blue Tent in Grow NYC's Green Markets and pick up a guide to local agritourism escapes to the Green Market's own farmers and producers. What's agritourism? Any type of agriculturally based operation or activity that brings visitors to a farm. Escape Maker offers a variety of overnight packages in the Hudson Valley, Catskills region, Finger Lakes, and more, doing all the work for you to immerse you with the locals and provide a full experience. No car? No problem. Escape Maker features plenty of ideas for car-free getaways, including discounts via Amtrak. Get out of the city and explore, while also supporting your local farmers. Log on to escapemaker.com now to get inspired and make your escape through the net. Awesome. Well, we are back. You, of course, are listening to the Farm Report. We are talking about that green chili life. And I want to talk a little bit about the kind of green, as in dollar bills, behind the company. And for that, I'm going to switch over to the money man. Ivan, the third part of our trio here. So you are a self-declared, is it KPMG?
Yep. All right. Sounds like a radio station. I mean, it's like KPMG, is that running for a radio station?
Yeah. So that you, so you're, you know, you're kind of in the second space of your career, looking at doing accounting and finances for a small chili company. So tell me, like, you know, how were they able to lure you away?
That's a good question.
You're like, unlimited chilies.
It's funny because when Nate first told me that he started like this company around green chili, we joke that like green chili, if you're from like the Northeast, means like stew, beef, beans.
Like
that's
chili,
literally what
like
I thought.
With an eye, yeah.
Yeah, and you're, I was like, for whatever freak reason, it's green.
Yeah.
And, but he sold me on like the cultural significance of it. So like I came and tried it out and I was like, this is not what I was thinking. This product is actually like really, really cool. And immediately I was like, we have to get this packaged. And so we've like we had so many discussions about that. But that's really where I saw the future of it, is like, this isn't just like a food stand. This isn't just like a restaurant concept. This is something that belongs in like anybody's fridge.
Right.
And it's like, to me, it's like similar to a sriracha,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that anybody can use it. And so that was what was really cool to me. And that's where I saw like the future and like maybe the future monetary impact of it. because like I literally got addicted to
it. You were like, oh, this is like easy. I get it. I know how to use it. Well, I think like too, like unlike Sriracha, which, you know, no shade to Sriracha, but the thing I think is so cool about the New Mexico green chili and kind of your story is it's a very specific agricultural crop. It's like this opportunity to talk about a time and a place and, you know, agriculture and culinary lineage that is really specific. And it's one product and they have a special time of year. And I just love kind of like those stories and those connections. But I've been like, people are always like, yeah, I want to start my own business doing like X, Y, Z. What do you think were some of the things that kind of maybe Nate did right at the beginning? And then some of the things that are kind of challenges for you guys now from just like, you know, paying the bills, like getting the growing the company, like how do you kind of think around that type of strategy and development?
I mean, I think we, from the point where we joined, it was like very small at that point.
Yeah.
And so it really was like he was selling us on this vision and he was like, but you know what, like where we are now, it can't really sustain us, but we're all going to like take this leap of faith.
Right.
And it was like from day one, from the point like I joined on, it like grew. And then when Cody joined, it like grew even more. And like, it's just been constant growth, but like, it's definitely been a lot of hard work. It's been a lot of trying things. It's been, especially that first year, it's like, hey, we're not going to get paid, you know, for like a little while because like we're trying to put our money into this and like, that's kind of scary because you're in New York and this is very expensive.
Yeah, well, how did you guys pay for your rent? I mean, how did you do it?
Can we skip over that part?
No, I think
there
I
were
do
some
think,
things that we had to do.
I don't need to make choices.
Craigslist was very important.
Let's just say we're happy to be on the Heritage Radio Network.
No, but I mean, like in all honesty, I do think, you know, so I feel like one thing that happens to small brands is, you know, people see you out at Smorgas, they see, oh, they got these cool jars with this like nice logo and they're like moving stuff around. They're like, oh, you're rich now. You know, that is just rarely the case. And I think too, it's like just important to touch a little bit on like, yeah, like we had savings or we were working two jobs or like, I think it's good for people to like hear some of those stories. So, I mean, and if it's Craigslist, and it's, you know, not fit for, I mean, it is internet radio, so we have some leeway, but, to the extent that you guys, you know, want to share a little bit about like, you know, pouring yourself into the business in whatever way that happens, you know?
I think it was a mixture of running on whatever savings we had, running on the little money we could spare, and really you had to like cut the amount of money you were spending on like excess, really.
No more $17 cocktails?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or at least just one. You know? A lot of pre-gaming, you know?
I think, yeah, I mean, I know for myself, I moved back to New York and I mean, I knew these guys, I met Ivan just before I had left for a brief little bit and was good buddies with Nate. And I think coming back into it for me, I was like that whole like, okay, savings, looking at the budgets and here's what we're eating and that's that. But also just from the company point, knowing what the product is and then knowing who these gentlemen are, you know, kind of knowing their skills and realizing I know I can trust them from different standpoints of just getting stuff done when it really kind of sucks to have to do something, or just if it's strictly knowledge based, you know, the accounting world, it's like, it's great to have Ivan on board. 'Cause it's like, it's not my thing.
Sure.
So it's, you know, knowing you're in a company, it's maybe tough struggles, but the skills we all kind of, the trio can put together really helps climb through those hard points. And, you know, hopefully we'll get to a point where we can enjoy this and maybe
you
eat more
other green chili.
Yeah,
kinda,
you know,
like,
I mean, green chili rice is great, but you know, we'll see.
What about with the producers and the farmers that you're working with? I mean, how are chili prices set? Is that a thing that obviously it's an agricultural product, so it depends on kind of like harvest and market, and how does that work for you guys when you're looking at your purchasing relationships and working with farmers?
Yeah, I mean, the growers that we work with, you know, we're very fortunate to have had these relationships with them for a pretty decent amount of time. So we're able to get them on good enough wholesale prices to be able to make it economical to get them out here to the East Coast and still be able to get it out to, you know, not only our like end buyers and the people who we sell to by the pound, but also a few like grocery stores and retailers out here too that, you know, I mean, the season comes along and it does become pretty desired for a lot of places to want to stock it, but there's that whole cost of it because it's like...
Yeah, and the timing.
And the timing because to ship it out here, I mean, you have to, A, get it picked, but then in order to avoid it going bad in transit, you have to put it on like a 2 or 3 day air freight at least.
Right.
And then, I mean, shipping is really like what will kill it for a lot of people. So I guess like us having these relationships, and two, I mean, we're bringing a lot back to them as well. And we're all working together in order to fight the good fight, you know?
Yeah.
Spread the chili love. Well, we are winding down a little bit here. That always happens like faster than I think it's going to. I want to share some fun chili facts with our listeners.
Yes.
Hear the chili facts music?
It's time for chili facts. So I have a couple written down here, but I thought maybe we would just kind of go around and share fun chili facts that you guys might have gleaned in your time in the chili business. But before we do that, I have one quick question. Green chili, red chili, what's the difference?
Well, so it's actually the same individual chili pepper, but as green chili grows and matures throughout the harvest, it will end up turning red. And when it turns red, it develops kind of like a sweeter flavor that is usually a little bit milder, but has this like earthy underlying spice at the end too.
So you just pick it later?
Yeah, it's just like picked later. And there are some differences too between like the north of New Mexico and the south of New Mexico, because they do have like very different climates. I mean, northern New Mexico is up so high, like 7,000 plus feet. And because of there, they have like a shorter growing season and the chilies mature a lot faster. And because it's more like kind of mountainous, like rocky soil that they grow in, red chili is a little bit more like prominent up there. Whereas down south, it's much more like moderate temperatures and climates and everything. And that's where I guess, you know, it's a lot more commercial and
how
green.
I lied when I said one question. I have a second question. I'll follow up. Because people always want to know when you're talking about chilies, like, is it spicy? Especially my people from the Midwest. We're like, is it spicy? Yeah. How spicy?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the great thing about them is, you know, you grow different strains of them that each have their own different pungency and level of heat to them, too. In general, I mean, even the really, really hot strains, it's a much different type of heat in terms of, like, it's a very flavorful spice, and it won't just ruin your entire mouth like a habanero or a jalapeno would or anything. It hurts, but it hurts
really
good, you know?
This is chili shade. Chili shade.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's share some fun chili facts. Cody, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I mean, I guess an off the chart chili fact is do not clean and peel your chilies with your bare hands and then decide to maybe itch your eye or maybe, oh, you get a little something. You don't wash your hands first because you will definitely feel that.
Is there anything you can do to other than just wait and kind of moan softly?
I mean, at that point, no, you're character building from there on out, which is nice. Beforehand, you can be proactive and throw on some gloves.
So, chilies are hot.
Yeah, so there's
chilies are hot in your mouth and on your hands on your body.
Nice to maybe have gone through that and feel you kind of earn your stripes.
That's true.
And, you know, burn your eyes one real time. You remember.
Yeah. What about you, Ivan? Any chili facts or tips?
Well, my tips would be put it on everything.
Nice. Because
that's what I do. I wake up in the morning.
Like a true.
It's in my eggs. It's in my sandwich. And if I go to a restaurant, I have a jar with me. And that's what everybody should do.
We've been known to just come to restaurants with our own own
kind of
topping.
A joke. We don't even do that as a marketing plug. We just kind of want chili it. With our food. Yeah.
So. Did you guys send some to Beyonce after Lemonade dropped? You're like,
no, but we made a better lemonade than her album.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Just saying.
Prickly pear cactus lemonades goes pretty far.
Nate, how about you? Chili tips and tricks?
I guess mine's more of just like a cool fact in terms of the way that I like, at least I like to think about chili. It's just such a special thing, you know, like it goes much more beyond just using it on enchiladas or something. Like you take the individual chili pepper and you can learn so much from it. Like you learn the chemistry around the chilies by like the way that you get different pungencies from different strains. You learn about overalls of like physics from the ways that you can engineer different colors and, you know, different colors, not only natural, but also they're used like ornamental and ristras throughout New Mexico and everything.
Ristras?
Yeah, ristras. So when chilies turn red, normally people will like dry them out and crush them into powder flakes. Or otherwise, they'll kind of like string them into these ristras, which are
like a cascading, long,
yeah,
very New Mexican, almost Christmas.
Like a chili wreath.
Yeah, long. Yeah.
That you haven't made into a circle.
I think it's, yeah.
Yeah, but so, you know, you learn all that and then you break it down to economics and you can learn about economics by just the whole chili marketplace and everything. So, yeah, it's this crop, but it's like so special in so many ways. And it is truly like a product of the land of enchantment. Like it's grown almost down in the middle of the desert, you know?
I thought that was just like the peyote kind of trippy in New Mexico land of enchantment. But chilies too. Well, I have a bunch that I wrote down because I was just like, I was really surprised by some of the health benefits of chili. So a couple things that jumped out at me. One, kind of fresh, medium-sized New Mexico green chili has the vitamin C equivalent of 6 oranges.
Which is, just to give a visual for the radio, I guess, what, that's just shy of a foot. I mean, these things can be pretty big. So they're not like your, you know, small little chili. They're pretty big.
So you're like... That's a decent sized enchilada. a teaspoon of dry red chili is the equivalent of your vitamin A needs for the day. I thought that was pretty cool. I didn't know. Apparently, they feed flamingos red chilies to make them pink.
Yeah, that, and they use a lot of, I mean, New Mexico is also huge in growing paprika, and paprika, you know, is a big cash bringer to a lot of growers, really because of like the coloring agents that it has. So they'll mainly, I guess they do it with red chili too, but mainly paprika. Feed flamingos.
Well, on
but
that,
I think on the record, the Zia Boys think flamingos should be fed their true shrimp diets, not fake coloring. I mean, it is a natural coloring. It's not really fake, but it's still, you know, I don't know those worlds. You know, flamingo people calling us
flamingo pink. Yeah. No flamingos were the harmed in the making of this radio.
Right.
Well, on that color extract tip too, that apparently, oftentimes red chili will be used as a coloring agent in some of the less savory aspects of the meat world. Also, for the ladies and lipstick wearing gents out there, in different types of lip products, lipsticks, glosses, stains, incorporate chilies too. So I guess you just really never know where the chilies are going to show up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, if you just kind of incorporate it in your meals, it's you're going to get a lot of vitamins that you won't even know about.
Ivan's walking around with a 16-ounce jar in his back pocket.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's like, I'm ready. Right,
he's packing heat. He's packing heat.
Always packing heat, even here in the final NYC.
Well, I am super excited. Thank you guys for bringing in some stuff for myself and the team to share. It's been really interesting kind of learning a little bit more about chilies, and thanks for coming out today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
No, thanks, Aaron.
That was great.
This was great.
So if you're out there and you want to learn more or get a delivery of limited time fresh chilies, you can find out more by visiting their website, www.ziagreenchilico.com. That is chili with an E, not an I. And you can also follow them, you know, on any of your favorite social media feeds. Same thing, their handle is Zia Green Chili Co. So definitely check them out. Hang tight. We are going to take one more short break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up the show with our Escape Maker segment. We'll be right back. All right, we are back, and of course, you know what time it is. It's time for our Escape Maker segment. Today, we're heading up to Yorktown Heights, New York. We are on the phone with Lou Munns. Lou is the farm director at Hilltop Hanover Farm. Lou, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Erin. I'm very delighted to be on the show today. Thank you.
So, folks, because my listeners are very astute, they will note that I said farm director, not farmer. So can you give us a little bit of a lowdown? Hilltop Hanover Farm is not your traditional farm.
No, it's not. The farm is historic. It dates back about 400 years. It was part of one of the original English land grants. And then it's gone through a tremendous history of different farming operations. It was actually at the turn of the century, it was actually an egg farm for the Barreltimer family, who owned the Eagle Pencil Company in New York City.
Oh, wow.
And then it was a preeminent dairy farm in the 20s up until the mid-70s. And some of the most expensive cows were actually purchased from this farm and shipped worldwide, more for a breeding operation. And then the bottom fell out of the milk market. And smaller farms, and this was we're only about 45 minutes from Midtown, and this region here was a huge dairy region before it became a suburb, where housing became much more lucrative than farming. And the property was originally 450 acres, it's now 187. Was purchased in 2003 by the County of Westchester for land preservation, preservation of our agricultural heritage, and preservation of the New Croton watershed, which is New York City's drinking water. And that was because a lot of farmers can't make it work in these smaller areas. And so, but we, in combination with a not-for-profit, have developed many farming operations and educational programs here at the farm. And we have a 150-member CSA program. We have food banks and food pantries that we help support. We have one of the few you pick vegetable farms in the area.
Oh, I love those. What kind of stuff can folks pick?
So we try to plant it seasonally, because the other aspect of our farm that we're really trying to get people to connect with is getting connected with their farmer, like know your farmer, know your food, that the USDA promotes. And people have lost that seasonality. Like, they just think that, okay, it's February, I still can buy tomatoes.
Right.
Well, so we do, we start the early season with snow peas and sugar snap peas. Then we move on to beans. People can pick their own carrots out of the ground, beets, Swiss chard, kale. The big winner last year was, and this year has been, potatoes, actually digging your own potatoes out of the ground. Families come and flock to us. And it's like it's sort of like a Easter egg hunt on steroids, actually.
Yeah,
so.
No, I feel like you're giving me like flashbacks. I lived one town over from a big kind of potato producing region in northern Michigan. And, you know, it was a kind of area where kids would be off from school for, you know, peak harvest of potatoes. And so, like, the idea of picking potatoes for fun,
yeah.
I'm like, all right, yeah, get after it.
I guess if I'm not doing it, you know, 24 hours a day, I guess it could be fun. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's like all the kind of classic things like your mom makes you do. My mom made me do when I was a kid, and I was like, ugh, I hate this picking. And now you definitely like find me. I can't not stop at any kind of roadside you pick opportunity. One of the things I thought looked really interesting from your website and something that I also could use. You guys do kind of classes and teaching around backyard farming. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of folks, you know, we're missing this generation of farmers, if you will, because, you know, our food industry has changed so much. But a lot of folks want to get back to their own backyard farming, whether it's beekeeping or backyard chickens or even learning how to grow their own produce. So we have been providing classes and workshops over the last several years for folks to attend on just how to do that. The big one has been actually backyard chickens. There's also in the last 6 months, there's been a very big resurgence in beekeeping. And so we offer these classes. And, you know, on average, we have about between 20 and 50 people attend.
Wow.
Depending on the interest.
Sure, sure.
And some families actually come with their children, especially if they want to do a backyard garden and don't know where to start.
That would be me.
Yeah, and also, then what kind of evolved is, you know, over the last several years, okay, now I've shown you how to grow your own tomatoes and beets. I really probably should show you how to put that stuff up and do canning. And so we've offered a lot of preservation classes as well.
So how far did you say you guys are from Midtown?
We're about 45 minutes from Midtown.
There you go, New Yorkers. No excuses. hop on up. Wow, Lou, I think this is so cool, and I'm always such a big fan. You know, it's so nice to hear kind of success stories around watershed protection and farmland protection. You guys are a nonprofit. You know, folks, if they want to learn more, can visit hilltophanoverfarm.org. What are the things that are kind of critical to keeping your operation healthy from like a fiscal standpoint, and how can folks get involved like that?
Well, we really need, you know, obviously people coming to the farm stand is a huge support, but we also have fundraisers several times a year. And this year we're having one in October. We had one last year. It's a farm-to-table dinner. It's actually in honor of our former farmer who sadly passed away last year at the age of 37 from liver cancer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so we're having a dinner again this year to honor him, and we're developing a scholarship program in his honor here at the farm for new farmers. And some of the money from that event will also go to his two young children for their college fund. We're also having a square dance event just right after that, and we do fall events. So for families attending and also becoming a member, we have membership opportunities here as low as $50 a year for a single and $75 for a family. And that helps support us because one of our other missions is giving back to food pantries and soup kitchens. And last year we gave 14,000 pounds of produce to food pantries and local soup kitchens.
Wow.
Which equates to about $50,000 worth of fresh, organically grown produce that they don't really have access to. So we're very proud of that. And when this year we started taking, there's farm market basically vouchers that it's kind of like food stamps or WIC. And we started taking that. Now we are certified to actually take WIC for food stamps for fresh produce. So we're very excited about that. And we're so the property is quite beautiful. When you come here, you feel like you're in Vermont because there's these rolling hills. And on a clear day, we can see the Freedom Tower.
Wow.
Yeah. And at night, you can see the GW Bridge and you can see all the lights of the city. It's really quite amazing.
Okay. I'm sold. well, Lou, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of peek. I definitely recommend folks kind of marking their calendars, making a trip up for the fundraiser in October or getting involved some other point during the year. And huge thanks to Escape Maker, as always, for putting you guys on our radar. And they are a great stop, escapemaker.com, if you want to plan your own kind of farm getaway if you're located here in New York City.
Can I put in a plug for some of the other local farms as well?
Yeah, girl.
Well, so there are at least 15 other local farms in the Westchester County area, all offering different opportunities for picking and harvesting a lot of apple orchards, some fresh meat and produce. And we actually have something we've been working on called the Westchester Grown Farm Trail. And many of the sites, including ours, many of these farms, are also part of Taste New York program. So you can come up for the day. There's some fabulous, beautiful towns. A lot of the farms here are supported by a lot of local restaurants, so there's a lot of farm-to-lunch and or dinner opportunities and shopping, and you don't have to go far. Like I said, we're only, 45-minute drive from Midtown, and then you can stay in the region and have fun visiting all the other places and cultural sites in the area as well.
And come back with a bounty load of good produce.
You got it.
Awesome. Lou, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real treat.
Erin, thanks for the opportunity, and hope to see a lot of folks here.
All right, guys. Once again, that was Hilltop Hanover Farm. You can find them at hilltophanoverfarm.org. Visit our friends at escapemaker.com to plan a trip today. Like she said, no excuses. Right outside the city, lots of beautiful stuff. Thank you so much for listening. You've made your way to the end of another episode of the Farm Report. If you like what we do, thank you. That is awesome. One way that really helps us and helps other people find the show is if you leave us a review on iTunes or on Stitcher or wherever you listen to your podcast. Another way to show your love is to make a donation, become a member. You can find us at www.heritageradionetwork.org. You click that beating heart and toss us a couple bucks. Every dollar, every cent helps. Also a great time to check out all 30 plus of our other great weekly shows. So that's what I got for you. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.